Hey there, we're the Westlaw Pirates and welcome to the show. We're here to share our thoughts on Northwestern athletics and college sports with thoughts and analysis from the visceral to the statistical. We run our tailgate with the red pirate flag flying high above as we give no quarter, especially the fourth. I'm Sam Walter.
I'm John Lacombe.
And I'm Eric Skoskowspo.
Well, of course, you know, we have a wonderful episode last week with Jacob Schmidt. Really, really great conversation. Great things about the auction. You know, we got more to talk about the auction coming up, some updates to give you. And then, of course, I'm sitting down to edit the episode the next morning. And what do we get? A giant news drop on that Tuesday. You know, we have a stadium, kind of. Football announces that they're going to be playing a majority of their games at the Lakefront Field. The practice facility, aka the lacrosse and soccer field, they're doing it. They're putting in the temporary stadium, and it's happening. And this is just incredible.
And it's funny, as Sam said, we sort of got an unfortunately timed news dump on that end, but we are armed going into this pod with fresh news, at least of a sort, which is at least a rough image of the specific stadium proposal that Northwestern submitted to Evanston. Now, we've heard from people, one Jay Sharman, Lake the Posts, maybe you've heard of him relative to this stadium, saying that is not a final draft, that there are going to be changes made to that. Like, that is not what it is going to look like. And that's to say, like, is it going to look drastically different? Is it going to look somewhat different? Like, that all remains to be seen. But we've all seen the picture, and I think we're going to get into this a lot because I feel like the three of us were a little taken aback with some of the reaction to this. But I think my reaction to seeing the overhead photo of the layout that they submitted, above and beyond every other reaction, dovetails directly with all of our reactions when the news first dropped last week, which is, it's just one more thing where you go, holy crap, this is really happening. It's a real thing. Look, there's a picture of it now. Maybe it looks like that, maybe it doesn't look like that, but this is real. It's really going to happen. One of the best case scenarios we could have for what the next couple of years of Northwestern football are going to look like for a majority of the games is really coming to be. And that, to us, I think dwarfs everything else.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think it's really important to talk about that best case scenario. Because, yeah, like, of course, like, we're going to see this thing and we're going to be like, could they put some stands over there? Could they put some stands over there? Should this section be bigger? Should they have figured out a boat launch? Could, you know, it's all going to be weird, right? This is a new spot. Northwestern's been playing at Ryan Field's Dyke Stadium since, the 30s?
1926.
So this is new for all of us, right? And that is going to come with some bumps in the road, and there's going to be some things that aren't perfect, et cetera. But here's the alternative, folks. I mean, it's April 15th, and even 30 days ago, Northwestern did not have many, if any, commitments on where to house games. We continue here. There's going to be a game at Wrigley, supposedly the Ohio State game. If you haven't been following this closely, the Chicago Bears basically told Northwestern, you cannot play on Saturday before a Bears home game. So until we get the NFL schedule, which doesn't come out for another month and a half, I believe.
It's after the draft, which news on the draft coming up, but we'll get on that a little bit later.
It was farther away than that. So maybe it's not that far, but you know, go back into February, March, the Bears were saying, yeah, until May, we'll have no indication of which games you might be able to play at Soldier Field. The Bears and the White Sox, and I don't know if they called the Brewers, but I'm sure the answer was the same, was basically like, it takes way too much time to convert our stadium. You cannot play here until the baseball season is over. So for games in September and October, it was hang around and wait until we know what the Bears' schedule is, or play all the way out at SeatGeek Stadium, which would have posed like some benefits for anybody who lives in that general direction. But like,
you know, like me.
Yeah, like you, Sam. And like, but I don't think anybody.
I need everyone to just cater around me and my needs.
Yes, of course.
And what I need to do.
But,
so
but that stadium.
Everyone can just go, yeah.
That would not have been a great experience from a stadium perspective, from a parking perspective, from a ambiance and fan experience perspective. This is a flipping stadium on the lake, the centerpiece of Northwestern. Think about in 2013 when game day was on the lake, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And now it's not game day. It's a goddamn football game, folks. In fact, it's like 13 of them over 2 years. It could not be a better showcase for the university and the facilities and the program. I mean, like, there's an argument, and I think it's a very good one, around the year that Welsh Ryan was being rebuilt and how that stunted the trajectory of the Northwestern basketball program post the NCAA tournament. There are a number of other factors, including some critical personnel decisions, both like forced and unforced of the coaching staff. But there's mm-hmm. no doubt that that year at Allstate affected the trajectory of the team. And to have this kind of thing fall into our laps, and I'm not trying to short shrift any of the effort that people put forth to bring this, you know, to fruition. But to have this fall in Northwestern's laps it's a godsend.
It's absolutely going to be awesome. And, you know, one thing that, we do know is there is going to be a lot of seats behind the end zones. That just logistically, where the field is, that's what's going to have to be. We don't know if they're going to be adding above the existing seats that are on the west side of the field. We know there is no space on the east side. You're not going to be able to do that. So guess what? There's going to, the majority of the seats are going to be behind the end zones. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Anyone who's like bitching about that, I have no time for that.
Well,
no time at all.
I don't want to, like, as opposed to getting to a tete-a-tete, like, hey, everybody, like, whether you know this or not, like, anybody who analyzes football, who likes to watch, like, the way plays develop, like, they want to see the All 22 film, mm-hmm. which is often shot from behind the goalposts, because you get an incredible visual of the spacing of the players, how the play is developing. Like, personally, when I go to games, not Northwestern, just because where my seats are at Northwestern, but I kind of prefer to sit in the corner, upper deck.
Yeah, corner's awesome.
So I can really see the whole thing. And yeah, being on the ground level of the end zone is not great, but like, I don't know. You're going to be able to see the skyline.
you're right. It's a cool visual. You know what else is a cool visual? A gigantic lake feet away from where you're watching your football game. Like, it's funny. It's difficult for me. I mean, to me, I guess some of this reaction is so reflective of, I feel like, where we are as a society right now, and then like where Northwestern is specifically. And this will make sense in a second, but I was thinking about this. So much of when I read coverage of, I specifically think of Ozempic and all related drugs. And I think about the way
where are we going here?
Every bit of press I have ever read about these drugs. And then I wonder, 50 years ago, would it be written like this? I mean, I'm like, I think of like, this will make sense, but the idea that you have wonder drugs that are improving the quality of life for millions and millions of people, and I've never read one article that was just that. It's like, what's the problem? What problem can we find? What's a negative way to look at this? Is there a supply shortage? Is there someone who had a bad reaction? Is there, et cetera, et cetera? And every time I see one of those, I'm like, man, is this where we are right now? That this is the only way we know to talk about something? And then I look at, like, obviously, yes, we know Northwestern's been through the ringer on like a bunch of stuff over like the past couple of years. There's no doubt about it. And in the wake of this, we had heard from a bunch of people who like wanted to make sure that Fitz got as much credit as possible, because it is indeed Fitz is the originator of the idea. Heard from people want to make sure that Gregg gets no credit because of everything, because it's so hard to remove something like this from everything that's inextricably linked to like the past couple of years. And it's like, you just want to scream and step back and be like, this is an absolute good. And like talking about, should Northwestern have gotten on this earlier? Should like we have done this? What the heck is the plan going to be? Why isn't the capacity bigger? It's like, this is an absolute good. This is beautiful lakeside football that is taking away from like, we'd have to truck to who knows where. And it's like, this is like not the time. I don't feel like we are not a bunch of three guys who are just out there like blindly beating the drum, being positive to be positive about things. But it's like the idea of like who gets credit. Like one of the big things about this is all of the people who carried the most water to make this happen are people who everybody loves. It's Jay Sharman, Lake the Post. It's Deputy Athletic Director Jesse Marks. It is new trustee Bob Hayward, who has been a Northwestern trustee for less than 2 years and has thrown his body and soul into help making this project happen. And it's David Braun. It is all of these great people everyone likes coming together to do this awesome thing that everybody likes. And now we're seeing pictures that it's really going to happen. And it's like, don't search to find negativity or uncertainty, etc. It's like, enjoy this great thing that exists now. Just enjoy it.
And also, you know, this is a two-year thing, right? We're going to be on the lake for 2 years, and then guess what? We have this gorgeous, brand new, sparkling, shiny yes. new stadium.
Yes.
On Central, where everyone's used to it being. And it's going to be there. And it's going to be incredible. So we're going to have 2 years of a very unique, very cool experience. And then we're coming back to home to a palace.
I do want to talk about some of the specific positives
that
I think are unassailable when you talk about this stadium on the lakefront. And I will start by saying 1,000,000%. This is not going to be the picture perfect experience for those that want to watch a football game. It's not. And that I'm okay with that because here's the trade-off. Like the opportunity for students to show up in droves and influence what home field advantage looks like for Northwestern in this unique space. Like folks, look at what Welsh Ryan looked like the last 2 years. That's huge. The opportunity, I mean, 15,000 seats. There are, I don't know, I'm guessing if attendance last year was 23,000 on average, I'm guessing half of that is season tickets, maybe more than half. So what, there's 12 to 15,000 season ticket holders. Maybe that stays flat. Maybe it dips a little bit, whatever. Like we're not all going to get all the seats that we used to get, et cetera. That's okay. It's a little bit of a bummer, but apparently we've gotten some relief from the Big Ten on requirements for ticket allotments for opposing teams, which means this is going to be a purple fortress. It will be packed with Northwestern fans, not half Iowa, not half Ohio State, not a bunch of empty seats because we're creating scarcity. That is going to be awesome to experience, even if the views are not great of the field.
Oh, the experience, absolutely.
The experience for the athletes. Think about the experience for the athletes to be playing on campus next to their training facility in this super unique space. If you don't think that this is going to help boost like recruiting, connection to campus, the feeling of athletes that they're part of the community, that they're supported, et cetera. If you don't think that matters, like it is going to be huge. And then one of the things I'm most excited about is that it is not just the football team that benefits from this.
Yeah.
Lacrosse,
so true.
Field hockey, soccer. We have the best lacrosse team in college and have for several years, and they get to play in this palace, this purple fortress of a palace for the next two seasons to defend what will hopefully be more than one national championship in recent years. And the field hockey team that won a national championship 2 years ago, the soccer teams that have been showing metal in the postseason the last couple of seasons. Like this is so exciting for the broader Northwestern community, the athletes, the campus experience. Like it's like the rug that really ties the room together. This is gonna be, there's so many amazing positives that come from this, and yes, there are some drawbacks and some things on first blush that are like, that's not great. I don't know where I'm gonna park. I don't know how far I'm gonna have to walk. I'm pretty certain Winnetka's not gonna give me a parking ticket, so that's good. But like, there are and I'm not just being Pollyannish to be Pollyannish. There's some fucking awesome things to be excited about here.
Well, and Scuzz, you've beaten the drum for, like, so effectively, specifically about hoops. And we've talked about this, and Scuzz has talked about it better than any of us, about the culture shift, right? And when you're honoring someone like Boo Booey, what you're honoring
100%,
above
yes.
everything else is the culture change. And one of the greatest testaments to that culture change was that Welsh Ryan, specifically last season and specifically relative to the students, was dealing with something that is almost unheard of in Northwestern athletics history, which is a scarcity of tickets. And that there were the situations where, like, oh my God, all of these students want to go to the game and we don't exactly know where we're going to put them. And were there logistical problems to work out with that? Yes. But it was this massive champagne problem of, like, oh my gosh, we've actually got scarcity. This is a hot ticket. People are going to the students being like, oh man, are you going to the game? You going to the game? There's a lottery. We got to, like, find and, like, get in. And, like, unbelievable. It's like people, like, again, the aforementioned Jay Sharman, who worked harder than anyone to help make this happen. Like, so many people can tell you stories of dark ages when there were, like, you know, vacant areas and, like, you know, praying people. And of course, like, how many times have you, as a Northwestern fan, sometime in your life, people ask you, what's the capacity of Ryan Field anyway? And you say, well, it's 49.5, but we haven't hit that number in, like, forever and ever, right? And it's like, this is the exact opposite of that. When Scuzz says it's going to be packed, it's going to be packed to the gills. 14,500 is, like, the listed capacity. I can speak just from our experience and the experience of every season ticket holder we have talked to. Every friend is coming out of the woodwork being like, hey, that Miami of Ohio game, I'll go to that with you. Sounds pretty sweet. End of August on the lake. Cool. You got an extra ticket or whatever? That's happening to every single Northwestern season ticket holder. They're going to pack that 14.5, and it's going to be ringed with people out on the walkways, and people are going to be parking boats on the lake, and who knows wherever else they can drum up seats, because everyone's going to want in on this. It's scarcity. When does Northwestern ever get to deal with positive scarcity like this? Never. It's part of the reason they reduced the capacity of the stadium in the redesigned Ryan Field, is because this is, like, sort of what we're pushing for, right? And again, it's like all of us season ticket holders are having people, man, you got an extra one of those tickets? You guys going to go to all those games? You got any spares? And it's like, I mean, what more do you want? At this beautiful location that's a hot ticket that everybody wants. It's amazing.
One of the things that we've always complained about Northwestern fans, or complained about as Northwestern fans, is you know, short shrift of media attention and coverage, et cetera, in the good times, right? It's not until, you know, Northwestern has already won 7 or 8 games that they show up for, you know, just in time for us to lose to Michigan. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like the puff pieces around Auburn that we love to joke about so often in that one bowl game from a couple of years back. But this stadium and experience and picture perfect view is going to be so cool. Like, this is going to get talked about everywhere, and it is not going to get talked about in, like, the negative, oh, I can't believe they're doing, like, people aren't going to line up to talk about how this is a cool thing. And Northwestern is going to get an immense amount of media coverage, free advertising, et cetera. If you don't think this matters in the all but professional level of college football that we're at today, like, this is huge. It's huge for Braun. It's huge for the program. Like, Northwestern's going to get its name and its stadium, pictures of its campus into every flipping corner of America that pays attention to or watches college football. And that is something that for years we complained about just the blanket default coverage in Chicagoland that Notre Dame would get just simply by being Notre Dame, even in the years that they were bad and we were good. And it felt like, what the hell? Like, are we chopped liver here? Like why? What? And the eyeballs just go to it, right? And now this is going to be an easy story for editors to spin up, like, hey, go do a quick bit about the, like, make sure we talk about the Northwestern, you know, game, show what that looks like, right? It's, I mean, this is like when you play at Wrigley Field for the first time, but mm-hmm. on steroids, because we're not going to have a unidirectional field.
it's funny. I randomly was thinking about looking at the pictures. And again, we've talked to Jay, who, again, we bring his name up a bunch, and there are a lot of key heroic figures in this, and our man Jay Sharman is right there at the top of the list. And I think you all know that. And Louis Vacare's article that Louis and Matt Shelton did for Wildcat Report only confirmed that all the more, that Jay's done so much work on this. But I mean, even as Jay said, like, this, the design that we all saw today, that overhead look that strongly, you know, pushes the north and south end zones, we don't even know if that's like the final. We don't know exactly how much variation there's going to be off of that. But it was funny. I was thinking about the idea of the stands being where the majority, the north and south end zones being where the majority of the stands are. And Sam, I was thinking back to when we went to the Northwestern night at the archives, and then looking at the old stuff of, I think, the old Shepherd Field, and then subsequently reading Dave Revson's book that he gave to all of us. And the old Shepherd Field, this is way back predating Dyke Stadium. All of the stands were in the end zones, and people would park their carriages on the sides of the field in between, their horse-drawn carriages all the way up and down, while all the actual stands were in the north and south. And then I was like, well, we're going to have that, but with boats, probably. It'll be like a bunch of people will be parked their boats, maybe their yachts, trying to climb onto the second levels of their yachts to look in and see the football. It's just cool. There's not much precedent for this. It's like, can you compare it to anything? No, but I mean, it's like, instead of poking holes and being like, oh, I have to sit behind the goalposts, it's like, you're getting to do something that no one else gets to do or will get to do. It's like, there's no precedent for this. You have to go back hundreds of years to find something similar, 100 years to find something similar. It's unique, special, and I'm just stoked we get to be a part of it.
And another thing not to forget about is, like, the university is well aware that the opportunity is there to make the entire game day experience really, really cool. And there's still a lot of discussions being had, you know, in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, all over, that, you know, a lot still in the air. Are there going to be, like, rented tailgates like you have down at Ole Miss at the Grove in the south of the new stadium? We don't know. Like, could you envision the Lakeville just being packed with tailgaters? That would be friggin' cool. You know, do you put up some giant screens outside of the stadium for the people who can't get inside, who just want to hang out and tailgate and watch the game that's happening, you know, 30 feet away? Who knows? Like, a lot is still up in the air. And I think, like, at this point, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. I know it's hard to do, but, like, there's a lot of balls in the air, and I know there's not a lot of time before the season starts. I mean, you know, we're looking at mid-April now. The NFL draft is coming up next week. We're going to be, you know, in summer camp before too long, but I'm going to have faith that this is going to be an incredible experience, whether you're inside the stadium or outside.
I'm just like, feel like the need to state, I feel like everybody knows this, but it's not like we're an official Northwestern athletics podcast. It's not like we're drawing funding or sponsorship from the university. It's not like,
I mean, if they did want to sponsor us, we would.
Sure. It's not like, I mean, you all know we love Jay, but everybody loves Jay. It's not like we're out palling around with all the principal figures in this. Like, no one's telling us to say that this is a great thing, right? And I think all of you who've been with the pod for long enough know that, like, we call it like we see it, and we call it like we see it even when that is very, very difficult for us to do, right? This is not difficult at all. This is just a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing that a bunch of awesome people we love worked really hard to make happen. And we're still kind of rubbing our eyes that it's going to happen at all. And the rest of it is like all these logistical things. Like Sam said, like tons of logistics to figure it out. I'm going to be super excited to see how it all comes together, because there's this thing is just overflowing with potential. It's like no one's telling us to say this. I just don't know any other way to say it. This is just a wonderful thing that I'm so stoked we get to be a part of.
If you or a loved one is seriously injured by someone else's negligence, hire Kent Simpson of the Simpson Law Group. After over a decade prosecuting murder cases in Chicago, Simpson opened his own firm focused on wrongful death and personal injury cases. He specializes in car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and other transportation accidents, as well as construction accidents, medical negligence, slip and falls, product liability, and more. Millions recovered for clients. No fee unless he wins. The Simpson Law Group. Compassion, empathy, and vigorous advocacy. Go to SimpsonLawGroup.com or call 312-332-2107 for a free consultation. And go Cats. Something else that we do want to mention, as is we'll come back and we'll talk more about this as we get more details. Still, a lot of details left to come. And we'll talk about them as it becomes necessary. But just wanted to give you guys an update on the Remembering Ryan Field auction that we talked about last week with Jacob Schmidt. Sounds like the opening week was fantastic. They raised over $80,000 in 1 week, which is phenomenal. And I know there's more coming. There's going to be a couple more rounds of auctions. We got the east side of the stadium signs coming up. There's other really cool things coming. But congratulations to True and you. Congratulations to Jacob and the rest of the team, Jay included, who put this all together. It's just a really, really great auction. And, you know, keep your eyes peeled as the second round comes up here in a couple weeks.
One really cool thing that I wanted to mention about this is it dovetails with something Jacob brought up last week, where we were talking to him about, okay, so like how is NIL in terms of where your funding is coming from, right? Like how is NIL evolving within Northwestern in terms of like effectively where's the money coming from, right? And he kind of talked about that where they started with a core group of really influential donors, right? Like top people, like that they felt like they could build a foundation. But obviously, he's looking to make a pivot, as I'm sure every college is, to really try to get the overall alumni base to endorse NIL and to like participate in this. And that's something that we've been proud to help kind of beat the drum for, because it's important. And, you know, we want everyone to feel like they can get engaged and be a part of this. And like hearing that, like $80,000 in a week, like this to me represents like a big step in that direction, right? Like these are a lot of individual people like going out and being like, I want one of those signs. I'll put in some money for that. Like I'll put in a bid, et cetera. And like a bunch of people got really cool stuff this week and made, you know, and $80,000 was raised. And that's not $80,000 from, you know, someone worth $500 million or whatever, like writing one check. That's a lot of rank and file people like chipping in to say like, hey, I want this thing and I'm glad that like my contribution's going. And like that's how you build momentum overall, like people giving a piece, right? That's how you really build and make this into something sustainable. So it was really cool, and I'm pumped that a ton of people got cool signs and memorabilia from Ryan Field.
Have you ever thought about building a Westlaw Pirates like community for your business? If so, we've got your solution. Teamworks Media, a brand marketing and content company, is here to help you tell your brand story better. Better yet, you can work directly with the founder, Jay Sharman, known on this podcast as Lake the Posts. The same expertise he's brought to brands like ESPN, the Big Ten Conference, and Northwestern University are now available to you in an affordable way, directly with this Wildcat superfan. Contact Jay directly at 312-446-9435 or jay@teamworksmedia.com to learn how to elevate your brand story. One thing we want to mention as we get into this past week in on-the-field action, We are going to be a part of something that they're calling the WNRS Weekend, Women's Non-Revenue Sports Weekend, that is being put together. We'll have more details as we get a little bit closer, but just, you know, picture in your mind, tailgates, going to the softball game, and then making your way down to Lakeside Field for the Big Ten Championship game, hopefully featuring your own number one ranked Northwestern Wildcats. This is going to be on Saturday, May 4th. So you can, you know, put your Star Wars plans a little bit later in the day, because you've got some incredible fun tailgating and softball and lacrosse to go watch on May 4th. So,
real quick, it's not just the 4th. It's, you know, there's a softball game on the 3rd. The earlier rounds of the lacrosse are on the 2nd. And there's going to be, I mean, Saturday's the big day, but there's going to be some events that lead up to it as well. So obviously we'll be sharing out and hitting the details on all this stuff, but it's a whole smorgasbord weekend of supporting these two incredible programs.
I think it checks a lot of boxes for, I think, a lot of you listening right now. Have you always wanted to do a football style tailgate in the spring? Probably. Have you always wanted to do a tailgate attached to one of these awesome women's sports teams and you haven't done it yet? Probably. Would you like a final chance to tailgate in the west lot of Ryan Field before it's no more and becomes whatever its next iteration is, right? Will there be another west lot? Yes. But it's not going to look like this west lot. Would you like one more chance, one more go around to tailgate there? All of these things can be yours. Just 9 a.m. May the 4th. Like, yeah, we'll keep providing you with the details. But I think the hope for everyone involved in this event and for us too is, like, let's build this out. Get on board with us. Let's do a big football style tailgate. Let's all just get together in the west lot and have a ton of fun and then go watch softball and lacrosse on a beautiful spring day.
Turns out tailgating in a central location and then making our way to the Lakeville might be in our future. Let's practice.
yeah, exactly.
So with that said, let's talk about lacrosse. Coming off the big win at Maryland, Cats came home to Martin Stadium and really took care of business against Ohio State, 19-10. We've got one more regular season game this upcoming Sunday against Michigan on the road, and then the Big Ten tournament also at Martin Stadium on the lake. Really annihilation of Ohio State, which is, you know, fun to say, regardless of what team it is.
Ohio State scored 10 goals. Dylan Amonte and Madison Taylor scored 11 goals. That's about the long and short of it right there. Dylan Amonte, who, I mean, of course, it speaks to just how stacked this team is, and how I feel like Dylan Amonte is probably someone we don't talk about enough.
Yeah, agreed.
One of the best lacrosse players in the country. She absolutely blew a hole in Ohio State in this game. Put up 6 goals. Absolutely incredible. And it's just, I mean, again, like, I feel like they should probably all be talked about more. I mean, of course, when you have maybe the greatest lacrosse player ever in Izzy Skane as the starting point, and then this entire squad stacked with All-Americans, to just feel like they're... you end up having all these unbelievable players that you're probably not talking about enough. But I mean, like, Amonte put her absolute stamp on this game. And right, this is one that was never close. It was 8-2 after the first quarter, and they pretty much just rolled from there. And again, like, rounding into form and playing just unbelievable lacrosse.
Well, it's nice to see, because they have a pretty big game coming up against Michigan this Sunday. It is for the regular season Big Ten title. Michigan was down, I think, in their game this past weekend, but rebounded to win. They've, you know, they've been probably what, number three or number four behind Northwestern and Maryland, and then some, you know, mix of Penn State or Johns Hopkins or Notre Dame within the conference over the last few years. But be a tough tilt, and it's on the road, and I think that's important. Just, you know, Northwestern lost at Penn State. They lost at Notre Dame. They had a pretty tough game at Boulder. obviously have had some epic wins on the road with Boston College and North Carolina and Maryland being the you know, three main ones, that, you know, that margin of victory has gotten bigger each time. So this is kind of one last remaining test that they got to, you know, keep their wits about them and not get out over their skis before, you know, getting to the meat of the postseason. So, but it's a big deal. And at the same time, like, this team is in just hyper excellent form. It's hard to see anything but them rolling into Ann Arbor, just guns blazing.
And where is the Izzy skiing watch as we have one regular season game left?
9 to tie, 10 to break.
Love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's right there. And I feel like this has been true all season. I feel like it's been true all of last season, too. It's wild to me that we have this absolutely transcendent player. And at the same time, I do find myself, like, doing the numbers and being like, where is Madison Taylor going to be in goals 2 years from now? part of the reason I'm kind of waxing romantic about Taylor in the future is the fact that she's going to play for the next 2 years in this gigantic stadium that, as we previously mentioned and previously referenced lacrosse when we talked about it. And again, I say it again, that picture that we all saw today, I get it. It may not be the final design, but the design that was shown there, you had 8,000 people in the south end zone stands. And we were picturing Madison Taylor next spring scoring a goal, you know, in some, like, where we pack the whole stadium, but there's 8,000 just in that, just in those stands. And then she scores a goal, like, at the south goal in Martin Stadium in front of 8,000 screaming fans. And what that's going to look like with the skyline in the background and the lake on the left on, like, a beautiful spring day, and just being like, holy crap. Like, for the best women's lacrosse team ever, I mean, like, you can't help but, like, get stars in your eyes when you think about this stuff and how good this team is and what their future might look like out there on the lake in that stadium. It's awesome.
And how cool is it that Bill Belichick was on the sideline?
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
As we joked, he's a guy with six Super Bowl rings with the Pats, two Super Bowl rings with the Giants, and that's nice that he was able to come out and bring his nice little collection and be the second biggest champion on the field that day. That was nice. his night. I mean, it's really, I salute him. Just super effort to get those eight. You know, I know they don't look like, next to Kelly Monty Hiller's 10 total championships, one for each finger as a player and a coach. But no, we joke. But I mean, it's incredible. But it's crazy, though, that that someone like Belichick, who has that many championships, that's like all the championships, you know, Bill Belichick has. Kelly Monty Hiller has more. That's how many she has. And yeah, there was video today of him addressing the team in the locker room after the game and everything, and he was just a fan. Just a fan who was wowed by the talent of the team. And, like, you're used to grumpy, curmudgeon-y Bill Belichick, you know, when people are trying to press him for Patriots information. This was just fan Bill Belichick who was just excited he got to watch this team, and how cool is that?
And what's really cool is, you know, reading the story about how he and Kelly Monty Hiller met each other, you know, in one of the early Northwestern championship runs. You know, she reached out to him as, you know, someone who, you know, loves lacrosse and, you know, has that experience in postseason and in winning. And they got connected and just kind of went from there. It's really, really cool story.
And as we were reminded by Kevin Leonard at the, you know, at the night at the archives, Ernie Adams, his trusted consigliere through all of those Patriots championships, was a Northwestern alum. So there's, like, another connection there too. Bill Belichick's not without ties to this university.
Where's his kid? Where's his kid's coaching defense somewhere in the Big Ten next year, right?
Washington.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I still had that tick.
Which did he wear better, the Washington hoodie or the Northwestern one? Surprised to see the sleeves on that shit.
I still had that tick where for a second I went, no, he's at Washington. Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, right. And last but certainly not least, let's talk softball.
On a heater, Ricky.
Yeah, we're on a heater. We didn't get a chance to we did talk about the Illinois game last week as we recorded that night. But what we have not had a chance to talk about is a 3-game sweep of Maryland at home, extending the home win streak to 36 games. Longest current home winning streak in Division I, which is awesome. And 2 close games and 1 absolute curb stomping on Saturday, a 5-inning run rule, 12-1. But just great, great softball being played.
Absolutely. I mean, and the power showing up. I mean, what would a weekend be without yet another Kansas Robinson home run? She started off, but Bridget Donahue had a home run in the first game also. And then in the second game, I mean, everybody.
Who was it who hit the grand slam off of Wes Ryan?
Oh, was that Muno? I can't remember if it was, or if it was Emma Ray. Oh gosh, I should know. One of them. But I mean, in the second game, Kelsey Nader had a home run. Hannah Cady had a home run. Emma Ray, Ainsley Muno. And then they came back and had won a pitcher's duel in the final game where, boistered by some unbelievable fielding. I mean, we put up the video and then a gif of Kansas Robinson turning just a wicked double play to help preserve the lead late in the game. And I mean, this is it. Like, this is the team we are also used to over the past couple of years where, like, this version of that team has totally arrived, where they just find ways to win. And maybe they shred you with 11 runs and maybe the defense shows up, right? But they're absolutely dialed in right now. It's just so cool. We're getting the very best version of this team right now.
It's pretty awesome. Ashley Miller is doing her best Danielle Williams impersonation. She's pitching essentially two out of every 3 games in these weekend series. She has effectively shut the other team out. Maryland scored 1 run, but she shut out Illinois. She held Michigan to 0 earned runs in the second game she pitched against them. And I should say these are complete games too. She shut Ohio State out with 7 innings. She pitched 14 innings against Michigan State and only gave up 1 run. She has been dominant on the mound and an absolute innings eater, going 5 or 7 every game, going all the way back into tournament play earlier in the year. And that's been, you know, with the bats showing up as they have over the past month, which I feel like has been the change from early on. There were a lot of like incredible Ashley Miller games that Northwestern lost by a run in very close fashion early on. And to your point, John, they're rounding in the form, they're coming together. They figured out what they needed to figure out at the beginning of the season. And they are atop the Big Ten standings, 12-1. Michigan is in second place at 10-3, all 3 of those losses coming to Northwestern. So turns out we hold some tiebreakers. And this is just a fun ride at this point.
We got the big return match against Illinois on Tuesday night coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we can keep the win streak going. Just the hat is ours, and I don't care who says anything else. It's ours.
We were laughing too because it's an afternoon game now. They moved the time up to 3 p.m. and we were like, poor Illinois, can't hold off the Reaper any longer. Sorry. It's just just the time was moved up. No stay for you. You have to face this buzzsaw that much more quickly. We would be remiss too if we did not give a little love to the baseball team also. who went out and took a weekend series from Maryland this weekend, right? And were, what, one run from making it a sweep?
Yes, they won game one, 6-5 in 10 innings, smashed Maryland in game two, 11-1, and then came back to tie game three, sent it to extras, and then but lost in the 10th inning. So, but this represented their first conference wins this year, and I feel like they've been knocking on the door. There's been some latent excitement about some of the players, some of the work that this team has put in, and to see them kind of get over the hump here and notch a series win is really nice. We can see if they can build on this momentum.
There's also should specifically highlight Preston Knott is absolutely raking the ball right now for the baseball team. Over his past seven games, four home runs, he's hitting .577 with a 1.154 slugging percentage. Those are, dare I say it, Kansas Robinson numbers. He's crushing it right now. So, and then in a larger sense, right, what a weekend. It was 72 and sunny every day, and all three Northwestern sports teams just absolutely dominated the whole weekend.
Saturday, there were a pair of turtle mashings going on at both the Jay and at the baseball stadium.
Yeah. Much turtle soup was had. But, yeah, I mean, it was just – it circling back to the same place we're circling back to this entire episode, it's – beautiful weather, beautiful sports, and then thinking to when are the biggest chunk of all of these games going to be played? August and September out on the lake, potentially in some beautiful weather. And it's yeah, let's leverage this amazing location that we have to play some sports.
Love it. So anything else to mention before we go, guys? The women's non-revenue sports weekend again coming up. The weekend of May the 4th. We will have more information on that as we get it. But you guys have anything else on that front?
Yeah, I think I just, because we just kind of talked about softball and lax, I thought I'd make that direct connection and hit the games real quick. So on Thursday, May 2nd, these are the semifinal games of the Big Ten lacrosse tournament. Those games are scheduled at 12 and 2:30 p.m. Central Time. There is, we obviously... We don't know if Northwestern will be playing in these games or which one they will be in, but there's going to be some folks gathering, attending those games, then presumably getting together afterwards on that evening. Friday, that weekend, Northwestern hosts Indiana in softball at home. It is the final series of the regular season. We mentioned they have a two-game lead in the conference right now. They play at Purdue this coming weekend, who's kind of a middle of the conference team, and then a really tough at Nebraska series next weekend, who are, I think, third or fourth in the conference right now. So this Indiana series on May 3rd, 4th, and 5th is going to very possibly decide the winner of the Big Ten, Northwestern going for their third conference championship in a row. So the first game of that series against with Indiana on softball is at 4 p.m., on Friday the 3rd, and there is a plan for probably some folks getting together ahead of time for a little tailgate, maybe hanging out after the game. Who knows? We'll see. Again, details will be coming. And then the big day is Saturday. Softball game against Indiana is at 1 p.m. The lacrosse championship is at 4:30. Tailgate in the morning, as John and Sam talked about earlier. On the 5th is the final game against Indiana. No official plans on the 5th, just because I think a lot of folks are planning it as a travel day to head back out of town. But this is going to be a really exciting weekend to just celebrate these programs, to celebrate women's sports at Northwestern. Good weather and good vibes and, a great reason to gather. So I think this is a If you're in the vicinity, or if this is you haven't had a chance to see one of these teams in person and you would like to, this is a fantastic opportunity to engage and to know that there's going to be a ton of other folks doing the same thing.
Amen. That's what we're saying. We're trying to build this out. We've already talked to a bunch of people who are in on this, that tailgate in the West lot. But it's like, if you're going to that softball game, come to the tailgate. If you're going to the lacrosse game, come to the tailgate. If you're the parents of Northwestern athletes, come to the tailgate. If you're just alums that love football tailgates, come to the tailgate. If you're a student that listens to the pod, come to the tailgate. If you're a Northwestern student athlete that plays revenue sport, that you listen to the podcast and you're going to, you know, come to a tailgate. You never get to if it's football. Like, you're always playing in the game. Come out to the tailgate. Everyone come. Let's pack that lot. Let's have an authentic football-sized tailgate and celebrate these women's sports.
Finally, before we go, this hasn't gotten as much mention as it has in years past, but the NFL draft is coming up next week, and with it comes our annual draft podcast with Gary Seegers and Chris Giannini.
I'm already working out my liver. I'm preparing.
we'll post the links. It'll be, live on YouTube, which is always a good time. And it's just a really intriguing draft this year. I mean, I feel like we say that every year, but, all the quarterbacks that are going to be, drafted so high, and it'll be real interesting to see where they fall. The Vikings and Broncos are both in the mix for quarterbacks. We'll see who trades up higher with what ammunition. That'll be a fun little stretch there. But
I'm sure whatever, all of our takes about quarterbacks will be absolutely correct. And really, who can remember what anyone said about any of the quarterbacks during last draft? Who can even remember?
I mean, we were all pretty six sheets to the wind. I don't think you can take anything we said there at face value. So
that's absolutely right. Who can even remember what I said about CJ Stroud? I probably said great things, but who's to say?
This draft show is we call it unhinged for a reason, because we're mostly just having a ton of fun with our buddies. But it is actually, it's worth noting, Chris Giannini has given us homework this year to really go back and look at past drafts and think through the QBs and how they actually landed. And we're gonna have some really good discussion. Also, my Vikings are potentially going to make either franchise saving or franchise tanking decision to trade multiple first round draft picks to jump up and get a QB. And that's, so you can come and have a little Schadenfreude for yours truly.
Right. And as we say this,
and
every...
I'm sure we're gonna miss on a quarterback in the first round too. So that'll just be entertaining for the Broncos side of things.
We say this every year too, but for all of you who are listening, you're probably going to be watching the draft anyway. Pop open your laptop or your cell phone and just follow along. It's live and you can ask us questions. You can pop right in the chat and just ask us whatever you want. You want to ask us a Northwestern sports related question? Go nuts. You want to talk about the fact that, right, this draft pales in comparison to two of the last three when there were Northwestern Wildcats in the first round? Go nuts. Fire away. You're going to be watching anyway. Why not steer things in a Northwestern direction and just join the fun with us?
Yeah. Well said.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll go ahead and leave it there for tonight. Head to our website, westlawpirates.com, where you can leave comments and questions. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @westlawpirates, and email the show, westlawpirates@gmail.com.
And next time. Sammy, YouTube as well.
That's right. That's right. We now have our own, very own YouTube feed. So head over to YouTube and share, like, and subscribe. Just mash that subscribe button, right?
Audio only, folks.
Yeah, audio only.
You're
for
not
now.
Getting our ugly mugs at 11:25 p.m. Eastern. Sorry.
Unless it's for the draft pod, indeed. In which case we will be on camera. I forget where I was in our outro here. So
I apologize. You've been doing that outro for 13 years, and I interrupted your flow. This might be the first time.
That's all right. Tune in next time as we give our visceral and statistical views on Northwestern athletics, and look for us in the west lot of Ryan Field flying the red pirate flag, because we give no quarter, especially the fourth. For John Lacombe and Eric Skousboy, I'm Sam Walter. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.